So your home didn't sell the first time. Are you fed up? It's time to make a change. Hire the Selling with CC team to get your home sold. We like houses to sell, not sit. To schedule an appointment, go to sellingwithcc.com.
Keller Williams, Jacksonville Realty.
Hey, thanks for stopping by. Glad you're along for the ride. Hayes Carlion is here. Tara Lagerman, Andrew Gibson, momentarily. Brent Martin will be here. A lot to talk about on the program today. Some NFL football, some college basketball. Gators in on the court tonight. Tom Luganville joins us as well. Talk some Jaguar football as well. How's everybody? How we doing?
Good. How good? Are you?
Man, I am fantastic. How you doing over there?
I'm fantastic. I had a great lunch today. Fish tacos.
I had lunch with T-Logs today. Pretty fun. You know what? You know what my day today was? Breakfast with Lauren Rue. Lunch with T-Logs. Okay. You know what I got working right now? Estrogen high. All right, just so you know. Okay. That's what's working on me right now. Estrogen high. What's that?
You've got to be full. You've just been busy, been cool. Eating
right,
all
right.
Day.
That and the fact that I'm a glutton. All that coming. Hey, a lot of things to get to today on the program. We'll talk a lot of Jaguars. Hayes was able to catch up with Taven Bryan, the former Gator. Now Jaguar defensive lineman. You'll hear that interview today on the program. As I said, Tom Luganville checks in. A lot of Jags talk. A lot of Jags Steelers talk later on in the program. But speaking of the Steelers, all right, Le'Veon Bell's not playing. Hayes, did he get it wrong, or did he maybe get it right for him? I'm not buying that he did it for future generations. I think that's a bunch of crap. But I do think he did what he wanted for him. He's got a bunch of money. Didn't need the money. Strategically, most agree it's not a great move because I think you said it, or someone, Prisco, I know, tweeted it, that those legs aren't getting any younger and he's a running back. What do you think?
I think unless he has a deal already somewhat agreed to, which he might, it'd be illegal. It'd be tampering,
right?
But it wouldn't be the first time. I think he made a mistake. I would have played. I can see maybe missing the first 6 weeks to limit the mileage, because the Steelers, knowing they weren't going to retain him, certainly could have loaded him up with 420 touches, particularly for a team that might play, you know, two playoff games, maybe more. You know, so I can see why that would be a concern. But I probably would have reported about around week six, and with some agreement from Kevin Colbert, which I think they would have been eager to make of, hey, don't run me into the ground, you know. So I think that would have made the most sense. He would have still pocketed about $10 or $11 million. That's unbelievable money per year for a running back in today's NFL, and. I do think it's going to be held against him. I mean, we've seen players that go against the system in the NFL. It normally doesn't work out well for them. I don't know that Le'Veon will fall into that category because of his talent, and he's still just 27. But my guess is when it got extended, my guess is somebody got in his agency or saying, look, if he gets to the market healthy, we're prepared to give him $25 million in guaranteed money. And if I think – when he heard that, then it made a lot of sense to sit out the rest of the year.
Listen, I think if you added up...
Did he get it wrong?
Yeah, I think if you added up all the dollars he would have made over the course of this year and then the next contract, he got it wrong in terms of total value, I believe. I don't think he's getting more because he sat out. I don't think this is a point that's going to be proven to pay off for people down the road. I don't think he's trying to change... I mean, he might be trying to change the way it's done for guys that come behind him. I don't think it will be. But the fact that I think Hayes is right on a lot of notes, too, because dollars keep going up in the NFL. They're going to have money to spend. The one caveat here is for a 27-year-old running back, when you see third-round picks and fourth-round picks and second-round picks and guys finding running backs all over the place, and on top of that, this 2020 CBA, I just wonder how that plays into some of these contracts the next couple of years. That CBA, that potential work stoppage, which is almost guaranteed to be a work stoppage, how does that translate to some of these big contracts coming up?
Is there this sentiment, though, kind of a non-football sentiment for a second? If the 35-year-old attorney, who was the rising star at Martineau, Carlion, Lagerman, LLC, and was the number one attorney in town and was making $3 million a year, said, you know what? I've made enough money. Screw it. I'm retiring and going to the mountains. Nobody would criticize him, right?
True.
Nobody would say, what's that guy thinking? You know what they'd say? They'd say, good for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Good for him for leaving the rat race, assuming he's got enough money, right? Why is it different with our pro athletes?
Because he's not saying that.
Well, no, but I'm saying he didn't play. He didn't want to play this
year. I know, he's not saying I'm going to the mountains.
Well, but I mean, he went to the mountains this year.
I think it rubs people the wrong way.
I don't know that I believe what I'm saying in the comparison. I'm just trying to see both sides of this.
I get what you're asking, but I do think there's a part, at least part of everybody, and I don't care if it's that lawyer or not, especially on a pro football team or pro sport team. There's two things. One that irritates fans, I think, the outside, the public, is, man, we wish we could be you. Right, yeah. We wish we could make $14 million a year.
Right.
We wish we could play that game for 6-7 years. You know, we wish we had that talent to be able to do it.
Sure.
A lot of people wish you could be that guy. You know, you can go to school and be the lawyer. I'm not sure you're going to be the lawyer making $3 million a year, but it's also not a lot of people that sit here and say, man, I wish I was that guy, that $3 million lawyer guy. There's a lot of people that would love to play a professional sport and be that guy making $14 million for 1 year, never mind 6, 7, or 8. And then the other side of it to me is kind of the Ben Roethlisberger and Mike Tomlin tone to this. And that is, we're all in this thing. Like, there is a level of selfishness, a level of business that needs to take place as a pro athlete. You only have so many earning years. I'm a big believer in that. But there's also a level of team. Don't they call this the ultimate team game?
Well, that's the thing.
Is the loyalty to your team when you have a chance to maybe go win a Super Bowl? And I think that's what's irked Tomlin and irked Big Ben to the point of, really, no communication with that team, people that he's gone to battle with for years.
Right, and I agree with that, by the way. The difference in my analogy was, hey, you know what? If the attorney did it, hopefully he wouldn't do it before the big trial, right? Hopefully, you know, if Le'Veon Bell really was going to the mountains, then if he's doing the right thing, he should have told the team in May, look, I'm going to go take a hiatus for a year. So you can be prepared.
Yeah.
And I get that.
I think he did tell them that. I mean, I think as soon as he said, if you franchise me again, I'm not coming, it at least was on the table that it could happen. I think, you know,
nobody bought it.
I think the Steelers ended up getting blindsided in the fact that he carried it through and it wasn't a bluff. But I don't think he hid that if you tag me again and don't give me a contract. He averages more yards per game than Jim Brown did. Right. He has the NFL record right now for running backs with 50 games logged. He averages like 125 yards a game. And I get James Conner's done a great job filling in for him. But Le'Veon Bell is an elite player. And if I was Le'Veon Bell, I would have played. I would have sat out 6 weeks and then come in and gotten the $10 million and hoped. I don't think you can live a football career hoping not to get injured. I think that's as soon as you get injured, that happens. He'll sit out this year, and he'll probably tear his ACL in training camp next year.
Kind of how it goes.
That's sports. So, yeah. So, I mean, it's one of those things where I think he would have played, get the $10 million, and I still think he would have been viewed very favorably, on the free agent market.
I think this is still communication, though. You know, a little communication with your teammates, guys that you trust and battle and all those things. I think he's being – remember, he's the guy that tweeted and said all that stuff the night before the Jags game.
Yeah.
I mean, I bet they were a little still ticked off at him for that. I mean, whatever that did, I don't know if it affected the game.
Well, and he also tweeted that this was going to be his best season yet or best year yet or something.
And didn't he say he's coming back at week 7, or was that just a report? Did he say that, or was it a report?
It was a report that was wrong.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But anyway, he's gone now. He's gone. And and you're right, though. Hayes made a great point. He may wind up looking up, waiting all this time, and then not playing. Something bad happens next year anyway. Mm-hmm. To me, the only thing I thought about is, and maybe you're right, Hayes, maybe he did tell him. But it did feel like cat and mouse the whole time. And he got a little coy on Twitter and on social. But a guy's allowed to not want to play anymore.
True.
You guys are allowed to retire early.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
he's
for
not
sure.
Retiring.
But like Brent said, it's communication. Yeah, it's just a respect level.
I agree. I agree with that. And he's not retiring. He doesn't appear to be.
He tweeted last week, see you later, Miami. I'm going to Pittsburgh like I'm coming back.
Well, he said, see you later, Miami. He didn't say I'm going to Pittsburgh.
I know.
He said, see you later, Miami.
He was spotted in Pittsburgh.
Oh, was he?
I think he was spotted in like a weight room in Pittsburgh or something. It's like,
is that what it was? Okay.
That's one of the things that annoys me when the players tweet something like that. They leave it up to interpretation, just like with Jalen Ramsey this week.
Their
tweets can be interpreted in different ways.
And they're trying to do it to a point.
They are. They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of conversations about players and social, but I think players are having a blast with it.
Jeff and I have had this conversation because he's like, oh, boy. If only Twitter had been around whenever we were playing.
It's just so funny to put
yourself in that position.
A lot of things to talk about. We'll talk some Jaguars football. Tom Luganville joins us in about 30 minutes to talk college football. By the way, Lugs, by the way, is now official. He's the Gator Beat reporter. He's been in
the
game.
Is that in the game?
He was there again last week.
He was there last week.
Is he doing Idaho?
Yeah, I'm going to ask him. He must be because he's done every other Florida game.
It might be the sixth best game on the slate this week. So
that's that kind of a schedule.
Game day there?
We'll talk some Jaguars football, Jags Steelers, that and a whole lot more. Glad you're with us. This is 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
My mindset is that we can still accomplish our goals. Mm-hmm. You know, we can still make it happen. It's going to be very hard. Margin for error is now zero. And our back's against the wall, you know. But, you know, we have the ability to do something special, you know. So I don't see why not, you know. I mean, you have to kind of bury the past, you know, put it behind us and just look forward. With our team and our talent and our coaching staff and the way we prepare, you know, I don't see why we can't make it happen.
A lot of Jaguar talk coming up. We're going to talk all about Jags and Steelers in a minute. But before I do, before I even get into it, I can't wait any longer. I got to start with what Florida's has brought to you by the Kitchen Flooring Design Center, today's sponsor. 425-6919 is the number to call. 425-6919. The Kitchen Flooring Design Center, located on Southside Boulevard. Welcome to floorsandkitchen.com. Before I get into Jaguars football, did you see
nail this?
Huh?
You got to nail this.
I don't know
what you're going to say here.
Did you see the basketball thing from the Division III game?
Okay, that's good. You got it.
Did you see that?
I didn't know if you were going there or Alex Cora.
No, and I'm not going to Alex Cora. I'm not worried about Alex Cora, okay? Did you see this?
This was unbelievable.
Yeah, he's lucky he didn't break the kid's jaw.
This kid this player from Fitchburg State named Kawan Platt, after a kid named Nate Tenaglia, I think I'm getting it right, from Nichols College, made a three-pointer, sucker punched him, elbowed him so hard in the jaw, looked like he could have knocked the kid out.
Yeah.
Actually,
the kid's running the baseline. I know if people haven't seen it because not everybody's on Twitter, and that's where you would have seen it. But, I mean, basically the guy's running out on a three-point shooter in the corner, and the ref's on the baseline. The kid actually looks back toward the ref to see if he's looking, and when he's not, he just absolutely – I mean, this is like off the top rope, WWE-style, bam, elbow. I mean, it's one of the most egregious things you'll see in sports.
Yeah, it's awful. The kid should never play any collegiate sport ever again, right?
Either that or he should be captain given a
Well, the Fitchburg State people
have suspended him, right?
Yeah, they suspended him indefinitely.
Congratulations.
Kicked him off campus. Did you see that?
Did they really?
He's been suspended and kicked off kicked off the campus.
Wow.
Which is how public was it too, cuz everybody saw it.
Yeah.
You know, so the thing was totally public with everybody watching it.
You'll find it if you haven't seen it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. So
who was it when in baseball? Was it Juan Marichal?
Came after
with the bat
with John Roseboro. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He took a bat to John Roseboro. Who was a catcher for the Dodgers.
Strike him with the bat.
He swung at him with the bat. I don't know if he ever hit him. But it would be along those lines. Right.
Juan
Marichal, pitcher for the Giants, took a bat to Roseboro. The catcher for the Dodgers. Talk about a rivalry. There's your rivalry. So, and that is what Florida stuff brought you by the Kitchen Flooring Design Center. I don't know. I think the Jags are going to beat the Steelers.
I do too.
Do you?
I do. I have a good feeling about it.
I know. I told you yesterday that I think.
What did they drink at lunch?
Yeah.
I heard about this lunch.
You said you were
going to go.
You said you were going to tell me.
A lot of martinis.
Margaritas.
Right. Yeah, we're knocking them back. You know,
I ate the worm out of the bottle too.
Yeah. I think they're going to beat the Steelers. I think they're going to beat the Steelers because that's what the NFL does. Okay. This is a game the NFL gives you like that. I think that I just don't believe that the Steelers are. I don't care how much the chips on their shoulder. I know they're playing, and the Steelers are pretty good. They're playing well, and believe me, I know that. Look, I was a diehard Steeler fan forever. I know them. I don't know the team as well this year because I don't know their depth chart the way I once did. But I don't understand the culture. I followed them so long, and I get them. And this is a game they would lose, and this is a. And I think the Jaguars have this air of confidence against them. I just somehow think things fall right. I just do. You guys, everyone was confident last week. I wasn't confident at all last week. I wasn't even remotely confident last week.
I was somewhat confident.
Didn't you guys all pick them last week?
I did. Picked
the Jags.
Yeah, you picked the Jags. I'm the one guy that didn't pick them last week. I wasn't remotely confident they were going to win. Now, they almost did, but I had no confidence. Luck was playing well. They were on the road. They were upwardly mobile. The Jags were still trying to find it. I had no confidence last week. Now I get the sense you guys have no confidence this week, and I think they're going to win the game.
Yeah, I picked them last week because I thought they were a better team on paper. I don't think this team's a better team than the Steelers on paper. I mean, that's as simple as for me. And they're playing really good football. I mean, I get what you're saying. Listen, I'm just kidding around. I mean, I can see why people could pick the Jags to beat Pittsburgh. All you have to do is go to last week's games. I brought up yesterday, Cleveland destroyed Atlanta. The Titans destroyed the Patriots. I mean, that was just two games. There was a bunch of other ones that were like kind of hit. I mean, Kansas City somewhat struggled, if you would say, with Arizona. It's life in the NFL. Understood. My only question about the Jags, I give their locker room credit because I don't think they've splintered. I know some of the Jalen comments and stuff like that can be interpreted as they have. I don't think that's the case. I think they've hung this thing together and said, if we can get one win, we can go on a roll where we won't stop.
Right.
They believe that. I think Blake Bortles believes that. He kind of said it again today. I think they really came out of that bye saying, hey, if we can just get a win, we can go on a roll. We're good enough to go on a roll. They genuinely believe it. I just wondered, did that get knocked back and knocked out of them a little bit last week, losing to an Indianapolis team I think is just not as good on paper as they are and the way it happened?
Yeah, I think it's one of those games where the Steelers are just I think they're just too in sync and too talented. Maybe they've been galvanized a little bit by Le'Veon, and while they struggled early with it, it maybe brought them closer. They seem to have a better chemistry than what I've been accustomed to seeing. I still don't think they're gonna win the AFC or anything like that, but I have been impressed with them. And, again, I think schematically they're going to create some issues. The Steelers aren't stupid. They're going to look at the two games last year that they lost to the Jaguars, and they're going to say to Roethlisberger, okay, this might be a week where we're not going to do as many 5- and 7-step drops, and we might really focus on getting it out of your hand a little faster because every single team that the Jaguars play now has figured out how to avoid giving up the big play. So to me, I think you're going to see the Steelers adjust to what they did last year, and I think they're going to have success with it. I mean, again, I wouldn't surprise me if Vance McDonald is running wide open on the second play of the game. Wouldn't surprise me at all if Jesse James takes advantage of a blown coverage, runs up the seam and Roethlisberger hits him for 35 yards. Antonio Brown and Juju are going to make plays. I think a big thing would be if James Conner is still in concussion protocol and can't play. That would certainly make them maybe a little bit more one-dimensional. But the other thing with the Steelers is their offensive line has really become excellent. They don't get enough credit for losing a talent like Le'Veon Bell and then bringing in a running back that basically duplicates the numbers. And they're getting after the quarterback as well. So I think you look at the Jaguars offensive line, missing Linder, missing Cam Robinson. How are you going to block Watt? How are you going to block Dupree? I think it really creates a lot of issues. So can the Jaguars win the game? Yes, it's the NFL. These things happen. It wouldn't even be in the team picture of biggest upsets that we've seen in this regular season. But there's very little on paper that tells me the Jaguars are going to win this game.
Yeah, I guess the Steelers are elite again. I guess they are. I mean, they've played like that. They certainly have an elite offense. But do you think they are? Is it the Steelers and the Patriots in the AFC Championship game?
Well, no. The Chiefs.
I think the Chiefs and the Chargers are two of the best teams right now. Is it the
Chiefs and the Patriots in the game? Are they the two best teams?
That's what I would pick.
Thinking would be Rams, Saints, Patriots, Chiefs, right?
Correct.
Okay, so that's conventional thinking, right? And then I kind of agree with you. If I was seeding the West, seeding the AFC, I would seed the Chargers third. I would probably have the Chargers seeded.
I don't really know if I actually think I might have Pittsburgh ahead of the Patriots. I don't think I have the Patriots as high as you guys do.
Oh, I always have them. I'm going to have them first until they're till forever. Yeah. Till those two guys are gone.
And I'm not – just because they lost one game, that's not what I'm saying.
You just mean maybe not ahead of the Chiefs.
Yeah, I just
– But I get that.
Or the Steelers. I mean, the Steelers – listen, the Steelers are better than the Patriots right now. right now. I understand that changes in 6 weeks.
But you would never pick them to beat the Patriots in a playoff game. Either place.
Oh, either place?
Either place.
Oh, yeah. If it's at Pittsburgh, I'd pick them.
Would you? Would you?
Yeah.
No.
Give me New England all day long.
This year. All day long. Yes. Right? All day long.
I'd pick the Steelers.
Yeah, I would. The Chiefs, I might pick them to beat the Patriots if it was in Kansas City, but I probably wouldn't.
I'm not picking against the Patriots.
Yeah, I'm kind of that way. I'm kind of.
I mean,
that
maybe
guy
in the Super Bowl I'll pick against them, but I'm not in the AFC.
I guess if it was the Chargers were coming in here at 6-2, if the Chiefs were coming in here, I'd pick the Chiefs to beat the Jags. If the Patriots were coming here, if some Midland team where there wasn't the magic in the history, I might pick them to beat the Jags. I just think there's something there. I just think there's something to it.
It's an interesting conversation. I think Hayes kind of hit on it a little bit, the one-dimensional stuff. Keep in mind that if we really look at – I mean, last year's games were fascinating. Obviously, the put-them-on-the-map game the Jaguars had, that defense, and what they did to Ben Roethlisberger on 5 interceptions was like, whoa. That was the coming-out party. That started this thing. That was like, well, this team is for real. You don't just do that. And that's just a blip on the radar. That was like, hey, this defense is good. But remember what happened. See, what I think happened a little bit in that playoff game is I think Ben Roethlisberger, Mike Tomlin, and all those guys got a little egotistical. Haley, was Haley the guy still? Was Haley the coordinator? Yeah. I think they got egotistical in that game, wanted to avenge the 5 interception loss, and said, you don't think we can throw it against you guys? Yeah, we can. Well, then Miles Jack picks it off.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, that started the thing. They said, hey, we can throw it too. Now, they made plays. Obviously, they scored 42 points, but we all know how that happened. That was more in comeback fashion, and they made some incredible catches. The Jags defense still won the day for much of that football game in the playoffs. But I think it was a little bit of an egotistical play. So my thinking is they come in here and do exactly what Hayes said, not only 3-step drops, but also run the football. They never tried to run the football that much against the Jags last year, and I think they'll learn from that. Now, Connor's a big part of that, but their offensive line can handle running the football.
And that's the thing. I mean, it'll be interesting to see who Pittsburgh goes with. Jalen Samuels, 5th-round rookie, Stephen Ridley, who's been sort of a journeyman in the league, has some talent, former LSU player. But I'm not sure it matters because of how well they're executing as a front. I mean, they've been excellent. I mean, Pouncey, DeCastro, Villanueva, they have got an excellent chemistry right now. Marcus Gilbert is still there at right tackle. So a couple former Gators on that Steelers offensive line, they've been incredible.
We'll see what happens. We'll talk more about that as the show goes along. You'll hear from Taven Bryan on the program. But let's take a break. Let's get into college football when we come back. Tom Luganville joins us from ESPN after this on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. It is time to talk college football. Tom Luganville joins us from ESPN, otherwise known as the Florida Gator beat reporter on our program. How many times now have you had the Gators, Lugs?
Well, I've had them 3, and then I just found out this afternoon that I've got Florida at Florida State on Thanksgiving weekend.
He's our beat reporter. I'm not kidding. He knows more about the Gators
The official voice of the Gators.
That's exactly right. So, which for our show is perfect, by the way. So, okay, let's start right there. 31-14, second half. Didn't look like there's a way in hell they could come back and win the game. And here's the odd thing, Tom. They didn't come back by an 80-yard punt return or a strip sack. They just started handing off, and they came back. It was a bizarre game, wasn't it?
It was so bizarre that as the course of it was moving forward in the second half, I kept looking for something that happened to South Carolina. And I'm sitting there going, okay, well, Jake Bentley didn't get hurt. He's not out. And Debo Samuel didn't get hurt. He's not out. What changed? There was literally nothing that changed. It was almost as if a switch got flipped on the South Carolina sideline. And, you know, it was interesting because coming out of the locker room, Will Muschamp had said to me, I'm very concerned about our inability to stop the run off of the right side of their offensive line. And clearly Dan Mullen was thinking the exact same thing on the opposite sideline, because that's exactly what Florida did once they got through really the middle of the third quarter and for the remainder of the game. I mean, who would have thunk it, guys? You're down 31-14, and you run the football to get back into it.
Yeah, Felipe Franks had 2 passes in the fourth quarter. I mean, it's astonishing.
Yeah, I know. It's nuts, isn't it?
Yeah. Tom, this is Brent. What does it say about Florida from Mullen's perspective? And you know, that final 15 minutes changed a lot. They could have just lost their third game in a row, second in a row at home, lost to the former coach in Will Muschamp. I mean, that fourth quarter, I think, changed a lot in Gainesville as you kind of look forward the rest of the season.
It was huge. And going into the game, I think that what Dan Mullen and his staff were was hoping that their team would see is that there is a lot to play for, including possible inclusion to a New Year's Six bowl game. I mean, if they were to continue to climb up, and you look at where they're sitting now in the college football playoff rankings, to be able to, let's just project forward and say they finished 9-3, they've got Idaho and Florida State coming up, or to get into a bowl game and finish 10-3, given the roster that they currently have, some of the things that they had to do to kind of piece it together and band-aid the whole thing, that would be a remarkable accomplishment. And Dan Mullen did not feel like his team even showed up the week before. He was so disappointed because he didn't see it coming. He felt like they had a good week of practice and then just failed to arrive and get off of the bus the week before. And I think he felt that way going into the locker room at halftime and essentially just told his team, if you're not going to come out and compete and play hard, don't even come out of the locker room. That's just staying here, and we'll play with 11 guys if we have to. And obviously, his team heard the message, and they responded.
Hey, Tom, it's Hayes. Kadarius Toney, watching him just on TV, looks like such an electric athlete. How is it being on the field, seeing him, and Mullen obviously got him more involved? Does that have to be a continual recipe for the Gators moving forward throughout the rest of this year, getting Kadarius Toney those 10 to 12 touches?
Absolutely, and doing it in a variety of different ways, whether it's as a direct snap wildcat, whether he's in the backfield and the motion's out of the backfield, and then maybe you throw some of the quick screen game to him, or bring him across the formation and some of the jet sweep action. They've got to turn him into a guy, and I think you're going to see more of this, that when Florida breaks the huddle, the defense says, hey, where is this guy? We've got to know where this guy is at all times. And you could make an argument that leading into this past week, they haven't really had that one guy, that guy that everybody's so concerned about. And maybe he emerged this past week. He certainly took a lot of pressure off of Felipe Franks. Their ability to run the football on early down, not really have a lot of was really the difference in the ballgame in the second half. They didn't get themselves in a situation where they had to rely on Felipe Franks, where they had to get in a certain 8-plus and come up with ways to throw the football to move the chains. And that's been, to be honest with you guys, when you look at the course of the season, that's been their recipe for success. When they've done that, they've won games. When they haven't, they've really struggled.
Tom, you just said in a week and a half you'll be in Tallahassee for that game. Let's switch to the Noles for a second. It sounds crazy. He's coached all of 10 games there. But are there any second thoughts about hiring Willie Taggart in the FSU administration in your mind?
I believe that it would be hard to think that there isn't. Whether you're questioning hiring Willie Taggart or whether you're questioning the hires that he made within his staff, how they've managed the current roster, I would imagine there's a multitude of questions that are probably being whispered throughout that building, and that's never healthy because that stuff gets around, it trickles down, and now all of a sudden you already think you may have a toxic environment within your own corner of the athletic administration, and then that stuff starts to spread. And listen, it's one thing when you see these types of things happen and you see some struggles, and then you see some signs of life, and you see some fight. And, you know, I kind of compare right now in this season how Vanderbilt's team has played for Derek Mason. Maybe they haven't won games, but, man, they have fought and battled and been in every game and have gone into the fourth quarter with people. That hasn't been the case with this Florida State team, and I think that's really the disappointing sign is you haven't seen a lot of fight in this football team.
Yeah, even Nebraska as of late, you know, I mean, they've been able to kind of get going, and that's what you expect. Like, okay, they're playing better football now, second half of the year. They're starting to figure out their coach and all that stuff. So I agree with you there. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, and if you can't find one, that's okay. I'll still ask you a question. Year two is so big for coaches. We've seen it. We talk about it quite a bit. I mean, whether you're talking about Stoops or Kirby Smart or Heck, even Mark Richt had it cooking for a little bit last year at Miami year two. I think that there's countless examples of year two being a real big bounce year for coaches and new coaches. But have you felt something like this before that you can remember in recent memory, that this Willie Taggart feel, that it feels so bad that it's almost hard to predict that year two would be like that?
I don't know if I think it's along the same lines, but having broadcast one of their games this year and kind of seeing how the season unfolded, it's not too dissimilar out west at USC with Clay Helton.
Okay.
And when you're looking at a storied program and you're seeing a team with athletes and they've got some depth and, you know, they play with some speed and you get on the sideline and you're getting pregame warm, but you look at them and you say, well, these guys should be really good. And something's it's just not. And it's so disappointing. And of course, there's a multitude of reasons. Probably put your finger on one factor that has completely turned this team upside down. But it's hard to think of somebody out there that has had a year like this and compare it. And listen, what's going to happen is Willie Taggart's going to go into the offseason. He's going to do a lot of self-assessment. He's going to then assess his staff. They're going to assess everything down to their administrative staff. They're going to assess their mode of operation in terms of how they practice, how they meet, what are their off-season weightlifting times. I mean, they've got to start really searching for some things to change the blueprint. And I don't think that there's any other choice but to make some drastic changes. And I don't mean, pressing the panic button, guys, but clearly what has taken place between the relationship of this coaching staff and this roster is missing some significant elements.
Tom, I've been told that you're covering Buffalo at Ohio tonight. Is that correct?
Yeah, man.
As a as somebody who we all follow the Jaguars very closely, tell me everything you can about Tyree Jackson, the 6'7" quarterback, because I watched him a couple weeks ago and I was blown away by his athleticism.
You know what he is? He's a more athletic version of Byron Leftwich. That's what he reminds me a lot of. Big, tall, strong arm guy, probably gets rid of the ball a little bit quicker than Byron did, but on stature and foot quickness, he's really good. Now understand, they've got some really good players around him. And it's interesting when you look at Buffalo and you look at the players around him, where their skill guys are from, Georgia, Virginia, Florida. I mean, they've cast a wide net to bring some speed and quickness. I mean, they've got two freshman running backs that are really difficult to contain. And then, you know, the big target on the outside is Anthony Johnson, who's a really, really good player. But that quarterback is a guy that kind of drives the bus for them. My concern with him is that as physically impressive as he is, he's only a 56% completion guy. And that's a really low number. I mean, that's hovering around like Nick Fitzgerald-type numbers. And so he's a much more accomplished passer than that, which I think is intriguing. I think that's going to be something that's going to be scrutinized with him as NFL scouts really start to peel back the layers. Is why is this guy not in the mid-60s in terms of completion percentage? He's got a great touchdown-interception ratio, but is he one of those guys that maybe is kind of erratic? And I'm looking forward to watching that tonight.
Hey, by the way, that was that noise you heard was a collective sigh from Jacksonville when you compared him to Byron Leftwich.
Yeah, I don't know if that's great in our market of all the guys
good
you could have picked.
Bad
Lugs, that's bad.
But the problem is there's not many 6'7" guys, you know.
You're right.
Dan McGuire at San Diego State, shoot, he played for my dad. He was a legit 6'8". There's not many of those guys to comp out there.
Remember Dan McGuire transferred in from Iowa, maybe, I think, Lugs, if I'm not mistaken.
You did, you betcha,
Hey, how good is Notre Dame? I mean, are they if they played Alabama or Clemson, because I think they may wind up playing one of them, probably Clemson, in that 2-3 game, I guess. Can they hang around? How good are they?
I think, of course, they can hang around. I think, first off, let's not compare this Notre Dame team with the one that played in 2012.
Right.
They are light years apart from each other. And that's a good thing if you're a Notre Dame fan. They just seem to kind of do all of the little things right. Probably the best defensive unit that Brian Kelly has had since that 2012 team. But offensively, they are really stable at quarterback. I wouldn't call them elite. I wouldn't say that they have a guy in Ian Book to just go out there and he just scares the daylights out of you. But what you get is consistent stability, and then their ability to run the football opens everything else up. I could make the argument that even though the shift from Brandon Winbush was important and it made a difference, this has all been about Dexter Williams. I mean, Dexter Williams completely changes the complexion of that team. My question with Notre Dame is the question that I would have with anybody that would have to take on Alabama or Clemson. Are they capable of getting in a track meet with those two teams and being able to go tit for tat? Could if the ball's in the end zone, boom, can they turn around and put the ball in the end zone quickly and do that over the course of three or four quarters? Because I think that's what it would take to beat either of those two teams.
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. I'm not sure anybody can, like Clemson and Alabama. All right, UCF, I've been a big backer. I've been in their corner. I think Danny White's the smartest guy in college sports, to be honest with you. But could they go down this Saturday with game day there and with prime time and all the – and that's, by the way, why I think Danny White's the smartest guy in college sports. But do they run into some trouble, you think, with Cincinnati?
Well, it seems like there's a recipe for that, doesn't there? It's almost like the only thing they got to do now is do a blackout. Because the moment you do one of those with your uniforms, you're doomed, right? You know, you start changing everything around for the big game, and then it's over. And so, you know, I don't know. I think this is a team that rises to the occasion. I think this is a team that enjoys the spotlight. And when they have the opportunity to prove their worth, they haven't let anybody down. Am I one of those guys that believes that they should be involved in the college football playoff? Absolutely not. Do I think that they are worthy on an any given Saturday scenario of beating quality Power 5 teams that would be in a New Year's 6 type of situation? Absolutely. They proved that, you know, last year versus Auburn. But I don't think they'll go down in this one. I really don't. This is I don't like them on defense right now, guys. They're not playing very good defense. And the College Football Playoff Committee is concerned about that, too. Now, they're going to kind of keep them in that 12 spot, which is probably where they belong, and then figure out what to do if they go undefeated and you know, keep them in that top 12 spot. But the pressure's on UCF, not on anybody else. So I like this team as a team that rises to the occasion. So I'm going to say no, they're not going to go down this way.
Tom, or is Jeremy Pruitt getting Tennessee turned around maybe a little faster than what we thought?
You know what he's doing is he's got his team showing improvements. He's doing, and their staff is doing, the exact opposite of what we talked about with Florida State. And when you take this Tennessee team and you go beyond the Florida debacle in Neyland Stadium and you look at how they have developed, how they have improved, I mean, they lost a heartbreaker to South Carolina, a game they probably shouldn't have lost. And then instead of going in the tank, they continue to respond. And Jarrett Guarantano's starting to kind of hit his stride. They're able to run the football. They have played remarkably well against the run. I mean, what they accomplished versus Kentucky last week in terms of run defense was sensational. And let's not forget, I mean, they've had a multitude of injuries. Their best defensive end, their best linebacker. You could make an argument their best safety in Micah Abernathy until last week, who returned against Kentucky. They've been without those guys on defense. And so I think he's done a great job. You look at the schedule, Missouri and Vanderbilt in front of them. What if this team finished 7-5? I mean, that would be a remarkable accomplishment considering this roster he inherited.
Tom, final question. On Saturday, you're going to have Ohio State. What's going to happen with Urban? One more thing came out the other day. They had to defend another thing with Grimes and Zach Smith. Urban seems at his wit's end. He's a great football coach. They're going to be 10-1 going into the Michigan game. They're having another great season. Is he going to say enough's enough? Is the stress going to get to him? And again, you'll be on the sidelines. You'll be able to watch him up close and personal. How's that thing going to end?
I think a lot of it depends on where the team ends. If this is a team that loses to Michigan, doesn't go into the college, into the Big Ten championship game, leaves itself out of the college football playoff, then I think you're going to see some real self-reflection and soul searching on what he feels he's going to do moving forward. However, I also know him as somebody who is highly addicted to winning. And if they were to beat Michigan, they were to get into the Big Ten title game where they would be pretty heavily favored, and find themselves in the college football playoff, now you almost get the sense that the batteries would be recharged. So I think the answer to that question relies solely upon how Ohio State finishes.
Tom Luganville checking in, talking college football with us, otherwise known as the Florida Gator beat reporter. So, Tom, we appreciate it, brother. Have a good week.
All right, guys.
Chomp, chomp. Well done. Tom Luganville talking all kind of college football stuff. Let's take a break. More coming up in a moment, including our community hero on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Yeah, no, no. And you know, I think that was a big part of why we were able to have the success we did last year. To beat this team, you got to dominate the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. And, you know, that's a big part of what we're trying to do and what we're going to try to do on Sunday, because you got to be effective. And like you said, it's a physical game. And, you know, whoever wins that physical battle up front is probably going to come out winner of the game.
It's a Kitchen and Flooring Design Center Wednesday on The Frangie Show on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, time now for the Community Hero. Community Hero brought to you by our friends at Center State Bank. Center State Bank is the absolute best bank around. Center State Bank, a bank that believes in you and Florida's business bank. Trinity Christian defensive back Stephen Williams led the way. Two interception returns for touchdowns. How about that? Two pick sixes in the same game, 54 yards and 48 yards a week ago. Trinity blew out Live Oak Swanee, one big. Trinity advances to week two. Trinity Christian Stephen Williams is the community hero. The community hero brought to you by Center State Bank. Brent, what does Leonard Fournette do this week? Better?
Yeah, I think that, I think he'll have more. I think he'll have less zero to negative yard plays, and I think he'll have probably a bigger, like a 35-yard run or a 40-yard run. I know he was pretty good on the screen game. I don't know what his longest run was the other day, maybe like a 12-yard gain or something. I feel like one time off to the left he picked up that. So I think he'll have bigger chunks in this game, less negative plays. I think that's more on him, Frank, because he's just getting back to this stuff. I mean, it's not an on-off switch.
Right.
Even as good of an athlete as he is, I think some of that vision stuff that he wasn't great at, that was very noticeable to me. And I think a lot of people, I think he'll be better at that Sunday. That's not to say he's got great vision. I think that's always been something in question since he's been in Jacksonville. But, yeah, I think he'll have a big impact on the game.
He seemed rusty, didn't he? The stutter stepping, the missing a hole or two. Did you get that sense?
Well, and I think, yes, I did. And I also think there's he's got to get confidence back in – his hamstring to really hit full throttle. I never really saw him at all, even on the screen. It still seemed like he is not quite himself in the open field. So maybe with a week of practice, now he has a game under his belt. Maybe he feels a little bit more comfortable. Maybe seeing the black and gold on the other side will bring that out in him, because it definitely brought out a different beast in the two games last year when he went up against Pittsburgh. So I'm not expecting anything, remarkable, but I do think he'll be in that 75-yard range on the ground, and I do think he'll get 30 through the air. So I still think yardage-wise it'll be probably about what it was, you know, a little over 100, but I think that the ratio will be tilted more to the ground game.
I think he's going to play pretty well. Do you guys think how's Blake going to play? What Blake? You always ask, right? What Blake we're getting?
Yeah,
I
think we're going to get good Blake.
I kind of do too.
I kind of feel like he had more confidence last week with Leonard back, so I'm hoping that with another week of practice, them both being back.
Yeah, I think that's right.
That we're going to see a good Blake this week.
I agree with that. He was confident Blake last week. He stepped into his throws. There wasn't much indecision. There's times when I think Blake doesn't let the pattern develop enough when he gets rid of the ball too soon. But I thought it was confident Blake last week. I agree with Tara.
Yeah. He hasn't turned the ball over in a few weeks. Blake, to me, I'm more concerned about their receivers.
Yeah.
and that's not like to say, hey, Blake, I'm not concerned about him at all. I just think I'm more concerned about them making plays downfield, not the fumbles even. I mean, I think that's a little bit odd, these fumbles the last couple of weeks from that position and really all year. But it's more, can you get downfield, get open and with this play action and then make a play? And by the way, guys, you're going to have to make a contested play. I mean, that's what happens in the NFL. And I just don't feel like the last month, 6 weeks, I mean, it's probably since Keelan Cole made that great catch against New England that it feels like there's been a play made by a receiver. And I'll give you Dante Moncrief breaking tackles. I'm talking about catching the ball.
I think Blake will play pretty well. I agree with Brent. My confidence is higher in Blake than it is the receiving core right now. Because now I think you're seeing – I think a big key is, does Cole's lack of success in the fumbling and now Rashad Greene, does that start to permeate a little bit to Dede Westbrook, to Dante Moncrief? I think that's tough when you've got teammates that are struggling through things to not let that affect you. These guys are so close together. It's such a small group, that receivers room, that it does sort of make me a little skeptical about how will they show up. Dante Moncrief, I thought, would play well against the Colts because I think he'd want to show them they made a mistake. But I could easily see him having 8 targets, 2 catches, 15 yards against Pittsburgh. That wouldn't surprise me at all. So I think Blake will perform well. I'm not sure how much help he'll get.
All right, let's take a break. It's time for Tell Tara now. We still have time to sneak a question in. One great prize? How many? One.
So we have one for today.
One
for tomorrow and then one for Friday. That's the way it works.
You're going to walk me through that. I'm a public school guy, Tara.
Okay. Do you want me to explain it again?
I didn't go to DeLand, nor did I have a tiara. Okay?
By the way, Englewood, this is not on you.
That's right.
This is on Frangie. This is not on you.
This is the one prize.
So how many does that leave us with for the week, Frank? So
how many days are left, are there?
3, including today.
So how many prizes are you asking me?
How many prizes do we have left to give?
5.
A pair of tickets to see Rudy in concert featuring the Jacksonville Symphony at Daly's Place Amphitheater on November 17th, which is this Saturday.
Altera's up
so
next.
Crazy.
Give us a call. We'll be out. Give us a call.
Give us a call.
Send us a tweet. Call us up. What's our phone number? Do we have a phone number here? What is our phone number? Call us up.
641-1010.
Call us at 641-1010. We'll take your calls right now.
How long have you been here?
I'm new at this. Back in a moment with Tell Tara on 1010XL.
Tweet your question for Frank, Brent, and Hayes to @TellTara. Best question earns cool swag. Tell Tara, brought to you by Beards Jewelry.
And I would like to say a big congratulations to my friends at Beards Jewelry because they just celebrated their 38th anniversary, 38 years of serving the Northeast Florida community. Go see my friends John and Ben. They have the largest inventory in all of Florida at the St. John's Town Center, and tell them Tara sent you. All right, let's kick it off with Patrick Haffey here. What is Coughlin's godfather first move at the end of the season? Does he do anything drastic even before the end of the season, Brent?
Oh, boy, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. Before the end of the season, I don't think so. I guess logic would say if there's a dramatic move, if things continue in a downturn, I think probably Caldwell would be the first domino. I think even before assistant coaches, I think that move, just because he's been over a couple of tenures, and I'm not saying I think that's going to happen, but if you're asking hypothetically, I would think from a splash, get everybody's attention, that would probably be the first one. What am I missing?
I don't think you're missing anything because he can't do really – I mean, he could cut Barry Church. He could cut Marcell Dareus. They could do that stuff. But normally you wait a little closer to the start of the new league year to cut guys.
Yeah.
You know, I would – so I
– as you approach March.
And even anything with the quarterback, like if he made a deal to get rid of Bortles' contract, gave up a pick, that all that stuff can't really – it could be agreed upon. It could come out in February that they're doing it, but they can't consummate it until the start of the new league year. I think it would be firings would be the first thing, and it could be a lot of them.
Anything to add, Frank?
No, I think they're dead on. I don't think there'd be a lot, but I don't think there's a lot of that.
All right, this one's from Marcus Parsley. Will Hackett ever get back to running the 2-back set? I know Grant was part of the equation, but couldn't a Yeldon-Fournette backfield with 3 wide force defenses, not to key on number 27 so much, give him more room to work? His YPC needs help schematically.
That's an interesting question. I don't think so, because I think that was put in just for Corey Grant because he's so fast and the way he gets out on the edge. And I think the idea, it's almost an RPO where you fake the ball to Fournette and then throw it to Grant. I don't think anybody else has the skill set to make that work. Whether it was Yeldon and Grant or Fournette and Grant, or even now if it would be Carlos Hyde and Grant if Grant was still healthy. I don't think without Grant it makes sense. So I think there's a reason why we haven't seen it since Corey Grant's been down.
I totally agree with you. That's why I thought they would maybe keep Charles once they got the power running game in Hyde, and one of their moves was to cut Charles.
Yeah.
And just to see that kind of package, because he would make sense as well. But I think you need the power running game. So it's not even a Yeldon Grant thing. I think it's either a Hyde Fournette, and it's a guy like Grant to make that work. That page has been ripped out of the playbook, in my opinion.
All right, this one's from David. I still think we have a darn good core. I don't care what these pretend bandwagon fans say. I think we will be back to the playoffs within two seasons. Boom.
Secretary of the Sunshine and Rainbows Club. Hey, there he is.
You know, I think a big part of it will be how quickly they're able to get going at quarterback. And again, Blake played well on Sunday. Maybe he'll have a great second half and change the narrative a little bit on this. But I think their core is not as good as many believe. I think they should look at guys like, you know, Brandon Linder. I think they've got to look at Jeremy Parnell, Darius Church. I think there's a lot of guys that are making good money in that top 10 range in terms of financial dollars right now that that they can get out of. And so I do think that the core needs to be shaken up a little bit. I would not do a deal for Jalen Ramsey this offseason. I would not do a deal for Yannick Ngakoue this offseason. I'd make those guys earn it with another year. And Miles Jack in the same boat. So I think there's going to be some replacements coming. I think they're going to shed some cap. They're not going to give out a big deal, and they're going to retool a little bit with that core.
I like their core. I agree with Hayes. There'll be some changes. I'd probably feel differently. I'd probably try and lock up some of the good defensive guys. So I feel a little differently. Look, they're not going to be a consistent winner, and they're not going to get back until they develop a consistent passing game. You can talk about everything else you want. I think Fournette's going to be a good running back. I don't know if he's great. He's good. I think the line, the foundation for the line is there. It may not be great. I think the defense, they got to find it. You have to find a path. If you can't have a consistent passing game, if you don't know what passing game you're getting, whether that's Blake, whether that's a weak receiving core, whether that's a lack of tight ends, if you don't know what passing game you're getting, none of the rest, in today's NFL, the rest of it doesn't matter.
All right, this one's from Zach. Will we ever see Carlos Hyde?
Boy, it looks like he's just insurance. Now, look, there's only been one game, Brent, where they were both up together, he and Fournette. So we don't know that one game's the way it's going to go. But it looks like he's nothing more than let Fournette get a breather, and that's it.
Yeah, I get it. I still think Fournette's your guy. So was I a little surprised you didn't see more? I think they thought, hey, Fournette's getting 29 touches. He's okay. He feels good. So let's continue. I thought it would be 20 touches for Fournette. More like 7 to 10 for Hyde. So were they really off that much for him playing, getting maybe just 3 touches? Maybe not as much as we think.
All right, next one. This one's from Dwight Corby. Will Lane Kiffin be coaching the Miami Hurricanes within the next 5 years? Go Dogs.
Yeah, it's interesting. Lane Kiffin's not having a great year, is he? Aren't they sort of struggling a little bit? Let me make sure I'm not totally speaking out of turn, but I want to say they were hovering around 500, if I'm not mistaken. So it seems like, Florida Atlantic right now is 5-5 overall, 3-3 in Conference USA. I don't think that's going to get it done. Yeah. I mean,
not with his baggage.
Yeah, I think he's lost some momentum. They had a great year last year. But I don't get the sense that Lane Kiffin right now is on the cusp of some major job.
All right, we got to pick a winner. It is Marcus Parsley. Marcus, you are going to see Rudy in concert featuring the Jacksonville Symphony at Daly's Place Amphitheater this Saturday. Congratulations.
Well done. More in a moment here on 1010 is Hella 92.5 FM.
They're missing Le'Veon, you know what I mean? But James Conner has been as effective.
Sure.
I don't want to say more, you know what I mean? But on that same type of, he's been impactful for the offense. So, I mean, they really haven't missed a beat, so it'll be the same offense.
It's a Kitchen and Flooring Design Center Wednesday on The Frangie Show on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Hey, don't forget now, tomorrow we'll be live at Brody's Discount Liquors. I'm looking forward to that. Come hang out with us tomorrow at Brody's. Compliments of our friends from Jameson. It's going to be a little cool out there tomorrow, the high 60. Bundle up out there, Martin,
tomorrow. I like it.
Well, we'll be at Brody's.
I think today, actually. Yeah, it's even kind of cooler,
It was. It got cooler as the day went on. It was a little warmer in the morning. But Brody's Discount Liquors at the Marsh Landing Park. We're out there by that Target. We'd love to see you. Come on by and say hello. We don't get out that way very often. We'd love to have you do it. And then on Monday, we'll be back at our friends, visiting our friends at the Calford Chop House. We truly enjoy that as well. So back-to-back remotes tomorrow at Brody's, Monday at the Chop House. Come out and visit us. Those next two remotes, we're certainly looking forward to. That was Miles Jack talking about Le'Veon Bell. Let's reset it for you. You know by now Le'Veon Bell did not sign his tender yesterday. He can't play this year, which is bizarre. We talked at the top of the program whether it's a good idea or not. Now Hayes are cleaning out his locker. The players aren't happy about this.
Yeah, they're not. It's really – I don't know that we've ever seen anything like this. He could technically come back because they could technically put the transition tag on him that's less money. And then maybe they don't get – no one matches the deal, and it's remote. But it's not like there's zero chance. And I find it interesting that within a day of this news breaking, his teammates are ransacking his locker. Now, granted, anything that's in there, he probably doesn't, I would think, really want. Unless this really was a fly by the seat of his pants decision.
Well, we know this. There's not a game check in there.
Yeah, that's true. But it is surprising to me that A, Le'Veon didn't give one of the equipment guys a couple hundred bucks to, you know, quietly get a box of his stuff together, clean out his locker, and ship it to him. But I do think it does show you what they think of Le'Veon Bell in that locker room, which they don't think much of him. But it's I do have a problem watching the video of Bud Dupree going through his locker and trying on very nice shoes and basically saying, "All right, these are mine now," and then taking his name off the locker. Very strange. But again, maybe this really did help. They were obviously blindsided when he didn't show up for week one and they didn't play well. But they have found something in James Conner. He's got like 1,300 total yards of offense and 11 touchdowns already. He practiced fully today, by the way, so he's out of the concussion protocol and he'll be fine to play Sunday, you would imagine. But bizarre. Just a bizarre end to this story, Le'Veon Bell in Pittsburgh. And who knows? Maybe it will affect. Maybe now that there's the clarity of it, maybe now the Steelers go in the tank for a few weeks, and it couldn't happen at a better time for the Jaguars if that does happen.
You said the clean out the locker stuff is like middle school, teenage girls mad at someone. You know, it feels like out of a movie or something. Like now they're taking his stuff.
Mean girls.
Now what we don't know is did he call and say, "Hey, you guys can have all the stuff." I mean, maybe he did and nobody knows that. I don't know. You bring up a really good point because, again, I keep going back to last year a little bit. I don't know how much Le'Veon Bell's tweet that Saturday night before the playoff game irked the Jags. I did just play last night on TV a soundbite from that January game. It was A.J. Cann, and he was talking about they knew they were disrespected and that kind of thing. So I think it was in the Jags' head. It was some motivation. But it is ironic that the last time this team played, Le'Veon Bell was a big topic within 24 hours of that football game. Now, this is – Le'Veon Bell's been a big topic before every football game this year for the Steelers, but it just hit a new level this week. So the irony there can't be lost going into the Jags game, and Le'Veon Bell continues to be a distraction for this football team, both in the playoffs in January and now here in November, and for a football team that's trying to do big things, just like last January. So it also shows me this, guys. There's 53 players. Sometimes there are great players, but great players are not always well liked. You know, great players are not always well respected. You love the game and you put up with great players because their game is important, especially if they're special. But kind of like we talked about with the coaches, the minute you can get them out the door and if you feel like you've replaced them, like in Pittsburgh with Connor's production, you're like, see you later. And it kind of feels that way. It feels a little Bobby Petrino and Louisville-like. Jim Harbaugh in San Francisco, like,
yeah,
in terms of saying, "Hey, look, you're great, but we ain't gonna miss you."
Right. No, you're right. And by the way, I don't know if they're either great at evaluating talent or the luckiest team in the world. But what are the chances that you lose Bell and you land a guy as good as James Conner turned out to be. He's really good. I read one place where someone said they think he should get MVP votes. Now, he's not going to win the MVP, but it was the fact that somebody as outlandish as it was would write that got me thinking, well, damn, what are the chances of that?
Bell never scored 10 touchdowns in a season. Connor's got 11, and they've still got 7 games to play.
It also makes me wonder, too, when you hear – we heard the Ravens defensive coordinator suggest that they're much better with Connor than they were with Bell.
Yeah.
Doug Marrone sort of said it today, not in that blunt fashion, but he said they are more efficient. If you look at their efficiency numbers, and he kind of, I think, put it more on the data than I tested it.
I see.
But he was, you know, basically saying, look, they're more efficient than they were last year. But I also think Todd Haley is despised around the league. And so I do wonder if there's a little sense when coaches say that, if it is sort of their way of sort of twisting the knife on Haley a little bit.
Yeah.
Because Randy Fichtner, the new offensive coordinator for the Steelers, it may be that, I mean, he may be doing a brilliant job. He may be doing a much better job than Haley. And that may be why, even though there isn't the talent there at running back, schematically with a new guy, they're doing things and their offensive line has responded so well to a scheme that it's made a big difference.
It's always a good problem to have. But the Golden State Warriors are fantastic. There's only one basketball.
Right.
Right.
That's
right. It's still hard to get everybody what they want. And it can be a very selfish game.
Yeah.
In professional sports, not just basketball, not just football. In professional sports, because there's a lot of money for that person.
That's right.
So what Golden State's been able to figure that all out, and a hat tip to Steve Kerr and them for doing it. But they have the same – well, they are having little problems right now. But Pittsburgh has the same problem. They have a lot of people to get the football to when Le'Veon Bell's in there. And I'm telling you, in the Jags games last year, that showed its head. I don't think they knew, okay, should we run even though we're more efficient running, or should we throw it to Antonio Brown because, well, he's our best player. And then we've got three other receivers and tight ends and all these things, and you've got to get Big Ben his numbers. He threw 5 picks. We don't want him to do that again. He can't look that bad against his team. I think those are real problems, good problems to have most of the time, but they can kind of interject in a game plan and make it difficult, and maybe that's what they're talking about with Le'Veon Bell.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little hoops. Rick Catlett joins us by phone, by the way. Rick Catlett by phone for a little bit at the top of the hour, but when we come back, we'll talk hoops. Stay with us on 1010XL. And 92.5 FM.
It's a Kitchen and Flooring Design Center Wednesday on the Frangie Show on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Let me check myself. Did I just say, Ken Brady just sent me a text. Sorry about Ken. We are at Brody's Friday.
Yeah, yeah.
Did I say tomorrow?
You misspoke, but...
Come on, Brett, your job is to edit me.
Well, I mean, I try to only do it like 4 or 5
You'd
times a show. You'd
be pretty busy. You wouldn't get anything else in? Let me apologize. I was one step ahead of myself. Brody's is on Friday, not tomorrow. Brody's Discount Liquors in the Marsh Landing Parkway. That is on that's our Friday program. Tomorrow we'll be here in studio. And then, of course, on Monday, live from the Calfort Chop House. Gators play tonight in hoops. How good are they, Brett? Just okay?
Average.
Just
yeah,
okay?
Very average right now. You know, I think we were talking off the air yesterday maybe about going to the tournament. And I think – remember, this is a team that struggled to get in the tournament at times. It was in question last year, even after that hot start. I will have to see more to be convinced that this team is going to get in the tournament. I think they were picked 5th in the SEC, which does lend to if they finish around that spot, you're probably getting in. But just because you're picked there doesn't mean you can't slide back a few notches either. And it just depends how strong the entire conference is. Yeah, I don't know. This could be a challenging year based off one performance, but it's way, way too early to judge them on that. I do think these freshmen will come into their own and play a big role. And what we've discussed a lot is, what is Kayvon Allen? What is he as a player now? Nowhere near what he was 2 years ago. And do you give up on Kayvon Allen at some point in these next 6 weeks and say, I'm leaning on the young guys instead?
Yeah, I think Florida is going to be really good by the time they get to the second half of the conference slate. I think he's got a lot of talented players that he's got to sort of figure out the right role and rotation for. And I think that's going to take some time. Here's the other part of this. I think Florida State's really good.
I was going to get that. Was my next.
I think Florida State is really good.
Maybe Final Four.
I saw some odds the other day on college basketball national title odds. Florida State is 90-1 to win the title.
Right.
Oh, I'd lay that. I'd be totally willing to put $20 on that.
See, I
think you look at it, all the.
By the way, that's coming. That's saying depth. A lot for Hayes now. That $20.
Yeah.
That's like $100, $500 for many of you. Now.
Well, I don't want to I don't want to use figures that are gonna. Yeah. I don't want to get in trouble. But a nice soda. I'd be willing to put down a for a soda. I'd take FSU and then I'd have 90 sodas.
And I tell you what, I want part of that.
Yeah.
Are they Diet Coke? Right. I'm in.
That Diet Coke better be working.
Hey, tell you what, I'll fund that bet. Okay, just so you know.
But are they going to win it? Probably not. But I mean, is it deep as they are and talented as they are, and now I think that program does have some confidence that it can be elite. It sort of tasted it. At 90-1.
They got a lot of pieces.
I think Florida State's an excellent bet if you're looking to place one.
They got a lot of pieces too, don't they? I mean, they truly have, and they're gonna. And I tell you what, he loaded. You know, number one, they don't always load up the preseason schedule like Florida does because they play in that great league and they get enough competition in the ACC because it's so good. But FSU is going to play either LSU or College of Charleston in that first tournament they're in. They're going to play Purdue, who's got a great program. They're going to play UConn, who obviously has a great program. They're playing some. They're going to play. At St. Louis, who has a good program, they're going to test themselves before they get into the best league in America. You know, so you all have a pretty good idea. I agree with you. I think Florida State's really good. You're one step ahead of me there. Maybe Florida's okay, but Florida State looks like they got all the pieces. They got a 7'4" guy, Kamaji, who's really good. They got a lot of guys that have played. Remember, they rolled Florida without Kofor, who might be their best player, certainly their best shooter, their best scorer, 6'8" forward. Savoy's really good. I think the fact that Walker's played a lot. I think Forrest is a really good floor leader. I mean, they're good. I mean, they're legit. So I was thinking the same thing. We learned from Florida last year. Brent, you made this point. We learned from Florida last year, don't jump to conclusions about somebody based on a preseason. You made that point, and I would agree with that point. But having said that, boy, they look good, the Noles.
The Noles do look really good. I don't know what the – I just try not to be too over dramatic about the one game, either way. And based on what you just said and what we've seen, and it's such a long season. But I think the intrigue is how good can Florida State be? Were they on the verge of something? So from that standpoint, and how much will these young guys contribute to Florida? How good will they be and grow in the next couple months of the year? And then I really think that's where the barometer moves for Florida. You know, I mean, depending on their growth, you'll slide that up a little bit. If they stay pretty static and don't grow as quick as they need them to, I think this could be a disappointing year for Florida.
We'll talk a little college football and a whole lot more coming up. Rick Catlett joins us from the Jack Sports Council. That comes up in a moment. This is 1010XL and 92.5 FM. It is time to talk a little college football. My man Rick Catlett joins us from the Jack Sports Council, the Jack Sports Council College Football Report comes up right now. Rick, how you doing, buddy?
Great, Frank. How are you doing?
Good. Now, tell me what you got. You got a lot of things going on. What's going on in town today?
Well, we had the ACC people in, and then we had all the ACC bowls in for a little mock selection to go through the conference and say, okay, if this happens, this happens. Who comes to Jacksonville? Who goes to Charlotte? Who goes to all their different bowl games. And so we were all sitting around in a conference room for about 4 hours today. And we now know kind of what's going to happen if we decide to go to the ACC. So it was a good day and a lot of fun. You know, obviously when you get with your counterparts and from other places. So all's good. We like North Carolina State in that conference. So we told the conference that would probably be, if we were picking in that conference, we'd probably be picking there. Pittsburgh's got a chance to win that division and go to the championship game. Certainly playing very, very good. So there's a couple of good options there, and now we just got to figure out the Big Ten side of it. And then we got that piece done, and the visitor's team will be easy to select.
So having said that, if it's the ACC and not the Big Ten, it's pretty much NC State, or can somebody else say they want them too? How does that work, Rick?
It's a combination of how the conference office feels, and certainly we have not had NC State, and how the athletic director, Debbie Yao, feels at NC State, and how we feel. And then if we can all get an agreement, then it can get done. And the same thing would happen with Pittsburgh. If we all got an agreement, we could get that done. So it's pretty interesting. Some bowls really like Virginia. Some bowls like BC. So it's going to be a very interesting deal. This game this weekend with Notre Dame, Syracuse, really will have a lot to say about it. If Syracuse can play them close and stay in the top 12, then of course they'll go to the New Year's Day 6, and that allows everything to happen.
Hey, Rick, it's Hayes. Regarding the Gators, if they win out 9-3, are they coming to Jacksonville? Does it need to be 8-4? How does it work as far as Florida being in the Gator Bowl?
Well, at 8-4, Hayes, we probably have a lock on them if Kentucky doesn't lose. Kentucky losing this past weekend put Kentucky on the board at 17, and Florida's on the board at 13 at that point. There's the possibility, if that stays that way, then we might lose Florida to the Citrus Bowl, and then we would have a great opportunity to get a couple of other teams that are doing very well, Texas A&M, LSU, some of those kinds of teams. South Carolina certainly is going to win, or should win, two out of their next three. That would be attractive, but we'll look out for Tennessee. And it's hard to say that, as bad as Tennessee has been all year long. But, you know, they've won four in a row. It looks like they'll probably close the season having won six straight games. And everybody knows how Tennessee travels. So keep an eye on that 13-17 ranking. If that gap closes up and Kentucky's sitting there, then we still have a shot at the Gators at 9-3.
Hey, Rick, it's Brent. It was interesting because the college football playoff didn't really move too much. It wasn't a ton of movement. Obviously, Kentucky did drop back a little bit, but really take a lot of that top 12, really nothing changed. How crazy do you think this stretch will be? And I say by the stretch, not really this weekend, most likely next weekend when all the rivalry games are. How muddied up can this get in that final week before the conference championships, just for all the bowl committees, yourself included?
Well, I think we all know that it always gets muddied up. There's a lot of opportunities for it to get muddied up. Certainly Georgia, Alabama is an opportunity. Auburn, Alabama is an opportunity. Oklahoma still has some work to do. They're going to probably have to play West Virginia again. That could really muddy things up. What are we going to do about Ohio State, Michigan? That really muddies it up because there's not a lot of respect right now for Ohio State. I will say this, the way that Alabama and Georgia both get in is to have Michigan lose to Ohio State and Georgia beat Alabama, and then you can see Alabama and Georgia both get in.
So if I'm guessing, back to your game for a second, NC State, Wisconsin, and SEC team, that's pretty much the hopper, Rick, pretty much?
Yeah, I'd probably put Michigan State in there too.
Okay.
State or Wisconsin, that's the two that I think are the most likely from the Big Ten side, and of course you never know. NC State's certainly there. What if Miami wins their last two and gets to 7-5, and you could get a Florida and put a Florida Miami together?
Yeah.
Tennessee, South Carolina would go with either one of the other two, and so would Florida. So, yeah, I think you're getting close. I think we're getting close to closing in on all that.
Yeah, yeah. And so I understood you earlier. Florida wins out. You think they're out of play for you?
I think they're out of play as long as the CFP continues to keep that 3-4 place gap between Kentucky. But here's the deal, and one thing that everybody needs to really focus on. Right now they're focusing on the top six in that committee room. I think they sit down after the top four are picked, and then they have about 4 hours that they look at the teams 8 through 25, and they know the value and how much money is in it, and they'll start evaluating. And quite frankly, if you look at Florida and Kentucky, they have the same team. They both lost to a team they shouldn't have lost to. They both got beat by a top team. And Tennessee. I mean, Kentucky beat them head-to-head in Gainesville. So I think you might see some shifting in the polls 6 through 25.
Rick, it seems like, at least to me, that Texas A&M is still sort of a new piece to this puzzle with them being in the SEC. If Texas A&M comes, new coach Jimbo Fisher, passionate fan base, how are they viewed as a pick in terms of traveling and things like that?
Well, as you said, we've got Jimbo Fisher, which is a great story in itself. You know, they play LSU the last game of the year, so that's a really critical game for Texas A&M, especially in our mix. But if you've ever been out there, Aggieland is unbelievable, and there's 90,000 people yelling and screaming in that stadium. I think that translates. I do know that we just got a brand-new flight nonstop from Houston to Jacksonville. So there's some things lining up that would be a good pick.
Yeah, that sounds pretty intriguing. Let me ask you, I know you're not going to say we're going to have a terrible bowl game, but could you end up with sometimes you get stuck with some bad situations. It feels like you're steering clear of some bad potential situations right now. Is that fair enough to say?
Well, Brent, I'd like to say that, but you just don't ever know. Right now, we've got a lot of teams. One of those teams that we like should be available on both sides of our equation. But you just don't ever know. I mean, Georgia Tech beat Georgia a few years ago, messed everything up. Remember that Vanderbilt beat Tennessee, messed some things up. So you just don't ever know. Championship weekend, rivalry weekend, back-to-back. Those two weekends, there's so many flips and flops. It's unbelievable. And who would be shocked if Syracuse doesn't beat Notre Dame this week?
That's right. That's right. It's been that kind of year, and I'll give you credit, Rick. Wise old Rick always tells us, settle down. Someone's going to beat someone that's not supposed to, right, Rick? You've kind of lectured me for about 20 years on that, haven't you?
Right. Well, Frank, it means money to me.
I think I've had Rick's game picked the first week of October about 25 years in a row. I don't think I've gotten it right yet, Rick, so I get it. Rick, what'd you make of Florida coming back against South Carolina, down 31-14?
I was really shocked. Certainly the quarterback looked like for the first time he got angry, and he played hard. I've said all year long, Florida's a better football team when they're running the football on a consistent basis. They certainly ran the ball well last week. South Carolina, on the other hand, seems to fold in most of those kinds of games. They've had big leads. I know three games they've had big leads in and ended up losing. So, I think the Gators are moving in the right direction. I also think, by the way, that I heard a little bit earlier Charlie Ward talking about FSU. I think that they're starting to move in the right direction. I'm looking forward to maybe even being at the Florida State game. So I think the both programs are in a learning stage. Florida probably a little bit ahead of Florida State because they're revamping the whole team and the way they play football.
All right, Rick Callow checking in from the Jack Sports Council. Rick, go enjoy your guests. Thank you for joining us. We'll have you back in studio next week. Thanks, buddy.
Always great, Frank. Thank you.
All right, Rick Callow checking in, talking college football with us. You know, I was thinking for the longest time Florida was going to wind up here. I think they've almost played their way out of the Gator Bowl. Do you think that?
Yeah, I think so. I was looking at some bowl projections.
You love projections. You're like projection Paul over there.
I love it.
You're so
happy.
Give
me a mock draft. Give me bowl projections. Give me bracketology. I can't get enough. But it was interesting, though, with Florida because it's all over the map. I saw one analyst, Jerry Palm for CBS Sports, had a Florida-UCF matchup in the Fiesta, which would be very intriguing. I saw another one where Florida was in the Outback. I saw another one where Florida was in the Citrus against Northwestern. And I did see one where Florida was in Jacksonville. So I think it's really hard. Florida might be the hardest team to really get a sense of where they're going to end up because they do have that, you know, that name. And I think – I know the system has changed a little, but I still think when you have a power name, it bumps you a little bit more up the ladder, maybe a little higher than you should go. I don't know that Florida deserves to play in the Fiesta Bowl if they beat Idaho and Florida State, but they might end up there because you really start to go down the line. They're 13th. Well, 12 plays Notre Dame this weekend. So if Syracuse loses, they're going to fall behind Florida. West Virginia still has to play Oklahoma State and Oklahoma. They could certainly fall behind Florida.
And probably plays Oklahoma twice.
Yeah, might play them twice. Washington State plays Washington. They're eighth right now. Washington State is eighth. And then LSU, seventh, still plays at Texas A&M in the finale. So if Florida wins out and, you know, falls, you know, into the ninth spot in the playoff, then they probably are going to go to a Fiesta, you know, bowl. And boy, Florida UCF, I got to say, I'd be pretty locked in on that.
Yeah, but do you want that in the Fiesta?
Oh, well, I don't know that the Fiesta wants it.
I mean, do you want to? I mean, no one, who's traveling to that, you know? I almost think by the way, I'd love to see a Florida-UCF game. That'd be a fun game to watch.
Yeah, I am not one of the – I'd love to see it.
Yeah. Would you like to see a Florida-UCF?
Oh, yeah. It'd be great.
I'm totally ready.
Who you like?
I like the Gators.
Of course you do. You're so that guy. You're so snobby. I can't hit him too, by the way. You're so snobby guy.
You're not going to be able to stop Jordan Scarlett and P. Ryan and
when
Kadarius
P. Ryan gets
Tony
loose,
and
you're thinking,
Pierce.
You're thinking that three-star from Altamont Springs at secondary. UCF guys, right. By the way, UCF is going to storm the studio right now.
I've never
UCF
seen it.
UCF guys so mad right now at us.
I've never seen a defense like this, Mackenzie Milton said.
UCF guy right now so mad at us.
UCF, I got your back. Knights would kick the Gators' ass.
Even if that happened, I think it would be really cool for the state. I've never understood there are Gator fans that don't want that.
They're
Florida State fans that don't want to ever see UCF.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Well,
I mean,
I can tell you this now. If I'm 10-0 Florida. With huge goals ahead, do I want to play them that week before FSU rather than the Vandals? Love the Vandals. Do I want to play them when they can mess something up? No, I don't want to play them because they're good. They might can mess it up. But in a moment like this, I almost feel like how weird is this? Florida's not the team that would have a lot to lose there. Did you ever think you'd say Florida, UCF, and Florida and UCF would have more to lose? But think about it. Auburn just beat Auburn. So if they beat you two, it's not the end of the world. They beat an Auburn team that was supposed to be better than you are this year.
It is better.
That was a New Year's Six game.
Auburn last year is much better than Florida this year.
Right. Yeah. So it's almost – you never thought you'd see the day where UCF has more to lose, but they do. Yeah, I'm kind of like you.
They're playing for a national championship. Right.
Another one. They're trying to go back-to-back, saying.
One team's getting pressure.
Is there somewhere else on the stadium they can paint the second national championship
banner?
They got
room.
They'll find
expansion's
room.
Happening. Listen, it would be awesome. A fascinating game to have conversations about because I think that's a fair question. I think Florida would have plenty to lose, by the way, from a recruiting standpoint, those kind of things. I think the gain, of course, would always favor UCF. UCF could – you know what else they're putting next to that national championship? They're putting a state champion flag, too. They might put Miami, Florida State, and Florida's records up on the facade. In 2018.
Does the Danny White thing bug you guys?
I absolutely love it. You know me.
How about you? Yeah, he really is.
I think we should get him
on. How do you feel about it?
I think it's a little tiring. I mean, I understand it in lobbying for your school. I'm not sure I would have put up a national title banner or signage in my stadium because some computer matrix said that, you know, you're number one.
Let me ask you this. I heard Dan, Jeff, and Lauren talk about this in the morning a couple of days ago. Are they going to the right spot? Is game day going to UCF the right thing? Prosser said yes. Hicken said no. What do you think?
Where else would they go?
Right.
I'm just curious.
Syracuse, Notre Dame. Syracuse, Notre Dame, 13 versus 3 in Yankee Stadium. So are they getting it right?
Yeah, they're absolutely going the right place.
Okay, why?
Because they've created this contentious, polarizing football program, by the way, that's outside the Power Five, which is so unique. When Boise State was around, everybody loved them. They embraced them. They were Gonzaga. That's not been the case with UCF, partly because of Danny White, partly because of their fan base. And now in the last month, from the whole thing, them trying to come up to Jacksonville, the back and forth with Herb Street, I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, the storylines are there. Notre Dame, Syracuse, I mean, the storylines are the Bronx Bombers and Notre Dame, and everybody knows the story. This is a new storyline. It's a great move. And by the way, listen, you can't argue anymore about Danny White. Danny White on this Saturday won. He laid the hammer to everybody that disagreed with him. He is getting 3 hours on ESPN College Game Day on his campus, and he's getting 3 hours of primetime football for UCF. Game over, people. I don't care if Cincinnati wins. Game over. This is the clincher. He raises the trophy this Saturday, by the way. You want the national championship? He just raised the trophy. He got 6 hours of coverage on ABC and ESPN for his football program. You know why? Because he did this whole charade for the whole 2018 year.
Well,
but he wins.
But Game Day's gone to, like, South Dakota State. They've done odd venues before.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm not debating you. He pulled it off.
They lose, it absolutely will hurt.
Yeah, but I completely agree with you. He pulled it off. But don't kid yourself. If Penn State was playing Ohio State on ABC this weekend, they wouldn't be going. They're going because there's not a good game in the ABC family.
Yeah,
the best
okay.
the Syracuse Notre Dame game is an NBC game. That's why they're not going. So if this game was at Syracuse or if Syracuse was the designated home team and the game was on ABC, they'd probably be going there. So, but that doesn't change. That doesn't change your point. Your point is he's gotten a lot of attention. I'm kind of like you. I kind of like it. I kind of like. Number one, I've never been offended that they call themselves the national champs because we all know they're not. So it's not like Alabama's got to give it to them because they won the – not like there was a debate in Washington and they won it, so Alabama's got to deliver the trophy to them. I wouldn't want that. But the fact that they claim it when we know they're really not, that doesn't bother me. I think it's kind of cool. I think more teams talking about college football. Having said all that, I agree with Hayes. By the way, I am a disgusting homer too, just like you are. Yes, I think Florida'd beat them. I also think LSU would beat them. I also think, obviously, Georgia and Alabama would beat them.
But you wouldn't be surprised if UCF beat.
Oh, no question.
Not Alabama, Georgia,
Florida,
but the other one.
No
the,
question.
Even
at,
maybe
yeah.
even
well,
LSU.
Auburn proved that.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing. There's some. By the way, I give UCF all the credit for that win over Auburn. I'm not someone that says, "Well, Auburn wasn't paying attention and it wasn't a big deal."
That's
for Auburn.
Problem.
Yeah, I don't believe that. I think UCF deserves all that credit. Having said that. Because of national champion and none of, they would have whoever's attention this year way more than they had Auburn.
Very true.
This year, right? I mean,
yes.
this year's team will pay attention. Will absolutely.
I think Florida, from just looking at the Gators, I think they would be up to play UCF more than they would be
play
West Virginia, Oklahoma, you know, of the other, like Texas, big programs.
Yeah.
In a Fiesta Bowl, I think they would love
to see
UCF.
How about this? How about West Virginia, Florida? Anywhere.
Yeah,
how
right.
good would that be? How Will Greer versus line. The Gators, okay? Okay, how good would that be?
That'd be really good. That'd be smart of the committee.
How about that? By the way, Jared Rice owes me lunch. You know that?
Oh, that's right.
Jared Rice and I had a lot. You know, I need to call Jared, don't I? Jared owes me lunch.
What does he owe you for?
Florida, South Carolina, straight up.
Ah.
All right? Wait. How about that? The reason I got to thinking about that
is... You were about to take him to, like, Ruth's Chris.
Yeah, the reason I got thinking about that is because if Florida and West Virginia play, I'm so betting Griffin, okay? I am so betting Griffin.
And by the way, don't bet a lot.
Don't bet. Small McDonald's lunch.
Yeah.
Griffin and I go out to lunch like to BurgerFi. It should be a BurgerFi lunch, but I'm so betting him. But what a game that would be. Wouldn't that be a fun game?
It would be. There's a lot of intriguing matchups for Florida. Rick's talked about... Florida, Wisconsin in Jacksonville. I mean, as a Gator fan, if they win out, it'll be really interesting. But, I mean, look, I think that'd be a cool matchup. A team never played. I got a lot of respect for Wisconsin,
yeah,
so I think that would be cool. I'm not as big on Florida. Like, I saw one that was like Florida Northwestern. But I like Pat Fitzgerald. I think that would be probably, of all the ones I saw, probably the least amount of buzz.
Yeah.
But I do think it'd be – they're a great – program that you know, I think it would be interesting to see how you stack up against them. But
be a great coach's wits game because
right.
Fitzgerald's very respected as he should be, and obviously Mullen's got this team way better than anybody probably thought. You know, I have no idea what the temperature other than freezing is in Wisconsin. But we talk about Florida State, we talk about Miami. The disappointment level in Wisconsin right now has got to be massive. I mean, they might start playing. I think that's why. Rick mentioned a couple of other teams, too, because they might play themselves out of this game, too. They just been very disappointing.
They're 6-4.
Weeks. Yeah. And what do they have left? Do you know what they have left?
I can check. I would think to get here, wouldn't they probably have to win out? They've got they're at Purdue. And then they close against Minnesota, who is sort of hit or miss.
You think they'd have to win both of those to get here?
What do you think about the way the Big 12 does it? They don't have divisions, so the two best teams play. So everybody believes that's going to be Oklahoma, West Virginia back to back weeks. Is that good or bad?
That's bad.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's really bad.
It's clunky.
I hate it in the NFL when sometimes you see that Week 17 matchup be a game that you know is going to be the wild card game.
Yeah.
But
there's no guarantee. You know, they still have to play hard that other game to maybe set that up.
But what it could do, by the way, think about it. It could certainly wind up elevating the team. If somebody sweeps, if one of them sweeps, doesn't that help? Doesn't that elevate your chances to get to that playoff?
Yeah.
I mean, really does.
Yeah. Listen, I like it.
Yeah.
Because from a football fan perspective, you get the whole week of storylines at just what happened. But also, think about it the way maybe – I'm trying to think. Maybe when the Missouri years and Florida years, when they won the SEC East,
right,
you know, that little stretch. Well, wouldn't you have rather seen Alabama-Auburn or Alabama-LSU or whoever it was, Alabama-Ole Miss in Atlanta?
That's right.
Than the 40-point blowout. So it protects a little bit against that. I kind of like it.
The college football world is a lot of fun. Speaking of college football, be tuning into the drill tomorrow. Riley Skinner checks in. The Riley Report. Be talking plenty of college football tomorrow morning on the drill. We'll take a break. Let's get into some NFL ball. That's next on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Arguably the most talented team in the NFL, and they're playing, you know, very good football right now. You know, they have a Hall of Fame quarterback, a Hall of Fame receiver. You know, O-line has been playing together for so many years. They're smart. They're real savvy. They open up a lot of lanes. Young running back who's taking advantage of his opportunities. Mm-hmm. I mean, they look really, really good on tape. I mean, you look at them, it's like, wow, you know, you got your hands full.
It's a Kitchen and Flooring Design Center Wednesday on The Frangie Show on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Glad you're on the program with us. Got about a half an hour to go on the program. Question. Did Dave Caldwell get it wrong? Dave Caldwell, that's not fair. Dave Caldwell, Tom Coughlin, the front office, get it wrong by taking Taven Bryan over an offensive weapon?
Yes.
Get it wrong.
Yeah, I didn't like the pick the night they made it.
Yeah, the idea when taking Taven Bryan, I got the idea. I didn't like it either. We also were all shocked by it. The idea when you took Taven Bryan was okay, at least my thought. When Telvin Smith and Miles Jack and Jalen Ramsey and Harrison and Boye get really into their prime, mid to late 20s, when they're really good, you don't want to look up and say, well, you don't have a defensive line because Campbell's gone and Malik's gone. They got old. So you have to build a foundation up front. So you have to have a tackle to go with it. I assume that was the thinking, that as you grow together, you do that. But you missed an opportunity to go get a pass catcher. I wonder if at the end of the day, and look, other things went wrong with that offense, but I wonder if at the end of the day, that's going to be what really got him, you know? And it's just one pick. But I don't sense that Taven's been a factor this year, right? With all due respect.
Zero factor.
And he's the first-round pick.
I mean, you could have, just for instance, you could have Dallas Goedert.
Yeah, Dallas Goedert, who looks like he's going to be a multi-Pro Bowl guy, a multi-year Pro Bowl guy, as opposed
productive.
To a defensive.
I mean, I'll just say productive. I don't care.
He's a really good player.
It looks like.
I mean, Christian Kirk is going to be a really good player, I think, right?
See, I don't have a problem. The Courtland Sutton and Kirk stuff is different to me because they got Chark in the second round.
Yeah, but Chark caught 60 balls in college. Kirk caught 230.
I get it. We can go over which one was better.
Okay.
But at least they addressed the position.
Right. I'm with you on tight end. I mean, I would have loved to see Goddard.
Yeah.
I think what happened to the Jags, I really believe this, like so many teams, they get married to their value. Okay? Well, we can't take Goddard at, where was it, 27, 28? We can't take Goddard there because we've got, he's 48th on our board or whatever. So we have to take the defensive lineman, right?
And they wanted Hayden Hurst. Yeah. I mean, they could have, if Hayden Hurst had slipped, right, he was probably in their fold.
Right.
Ridley, I think, went off right before him to Atlanta. I think he was in their fold. So, yeah, I mean, who knows how – you're not going to pick a guy. If you have him 45th on your board, you're most likely not picking him 28th.
All right, what is Taven Bryan in 5 years?
Oof.
He's a three technique, not an end. Do we agree on that?
I think he's
still the Wyoming Wild Man. That's what he is.
I, based on what we've seen, it's hard to project any kind of stardom. I mean, I will say – I didn't like the pick. the night they made it, I came in. We did the show the next day, and I didn't like the pick. You know, in part because, but now for why I didn't like the pick, I'll now sort of defend them on it. They, at least on his immediate impact, because they never billed him as an immediate game changer for the defense. They never got up there at the podium that night and said, this is somebody who is going to wreak havoc as a rookie in this league. They got up there and said, this is somebody who has a ton of raw ability that we believe will develop into down the road into an elite defensive lineman in the NFL. So to their credit, or at least to the benefit of the doubt for them, I never got the sense that they hyped really any of these players.
True.
As come in and, you know, dominate right away picks. You know, these were guys that were going to need time to develop. So I'm not, you know, really ready. I wouldn't have picked them. You know, I thought it was somewhat of an arrogant pick, like, oh, we've got everything figured out so we can make this luxury pick to protect us for down the road. I do think they would have been better off with a tight end or an offensive lineman. I agree with what you're saying. You get Chark in the second round. So, okay, receiver, I think they address. I would have been fine if they'd taken Chark at 29. Once you saw that pick, I was a little bit easier on them taking Taven Bryan. But the whole draft really felt like it was more for the future than it was for helping right now, which in hindsight now, which isn't entirely fair to them, but it, with access to the results of how it all played out, it was arrogant because they needed help in the present, and they didn't see that.
Taven Bryan, the former Florida Gator, now defensive lineman for the Jaguars, the first-round draft pick, is the topic of this Hayes Carlion one-on-one.
We're pleased to be joined with Jaguars defensive lineman Taven Bryan here on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. Taven, it's good to see you. How was the bye week and getting back into the flow of things?
It's good. You know, got a little time off and, you know, get everything going again.
What's it like, been like in the room? Dante gets traded. Opportunities present themselves. What's it been like as you guys move on from Dante?
You know, we got one guy gone, so we just kind of got replaced with where he was, and just keep on going and keep cruising with where we're going.
How would you assess sort of where you're at, the progress that you've made so far your rookie year?
I'm getting better. Yeah, it's been a long process, but you know, definitely not going to give up yet. So we're going to keep grinding. We'll be good. So it should be fun.
The Steelers, is that a team that sort of gets your blood up a little bit based on what happened last year and just their tradition?
Yeah, I mean, every game is really exciting. I mean, especially because it's a home game, I'm excited. It's nice to be home, and I'm just ready to play. So,
what are some things, 7 weeks left, what are some things that you're trying to achieve, some goals that you have individually as far as, you know, progressing as a rookie?
I just get better every day, make sure I'm ready for the next game. So,
what's it been like working with Coach Hobby? How has he made you better?
He's a technician, really good at technique, and he sits down and breaks down everything. So we get a lot of technique work on a lot of film, a lot of in the practice stuff.
What'd you think of the Gators comeback over South Carolina? Have you been paying attention to your former team this year?
I've been watching a little bit. They've been doing good. I'm really happy with them. And, you know, they did beat Muschamp. You know, yeah. Do love Muschamp. But, yeah, it was a good win, and, you know, it was a good win for them.
You kind of saw that coming, that the work that Savage was doing, that there might be a newfound maybe toughness. And we've sort of seen that. They came back down, big DeVandy, won the game, came back obviously Saturday. What you saw in the offseason when you visited, is that sort of played out in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, you can tell a big difference in the guys right now. All of them are definitely in better shape. I mean, everybody looks better. People are playing better. So, you know, it's just really something they needed, and they got a good staff, and it's going to be a good season for them, and I assume they're going to keep being good. So,
how much did the bye week help you? What'd you do, and was it good to sort of get away from football for a few days after you've got, you know, the draft process is such a long one and things like that? Good to get some rest, get away from it?
Oh, yeah, it's good. It's definitely a long process, though. It's long, so. It's long. Rookie year is definitely long, so.
What do you think will be some things that you work on for the final 7 weeks, but also as you start to look towards year two, being a pro in this league? What's like the big step in your mind that if you could accomplish this, big things could happen for you?
I just got to be more consistent, in my opinion. If I'm more consistent with my stance and how everything goes, I tend to play a lot better, and I haven't been as consistent as I would like to be, and that's probably my biggest thing, is just being consistent with consistently doing the same thing over and over.
Taven Bryan, thanks so much for your time. Best of luck on Sunday.
Thank you.
he'll certainly be a player we'll all be watching close, and you know, we'll see. But boy, it'd be a great boost for the franchise if, you know, we're sitting here Sunday evening saying, "Wow, how about Taven Bryan 2.5 sacks on Roethlisberger?"
A couple more thoughts on just the whole Taven Bryan thing, real quick. You know, to their thinking, one was, and I know for a fact, was we don't want to be Seattle, to Frank's point. It's like we want to replenish but not have this thing just fall apart after being great at 1 year or 2 years. So that was their thinking with him and Ronnie Harrison. And Harrison made a lot of sense to me in the third round because you figured Barry Church was done after this year. 2 years after his four-year deal, getting a little older, and I think he's gotten probably a little older quicker than anybody even anticipated, hasn't played very well. The other part is, and we scream this now, if you remember the conversation, Calais Campbell played a ton of snaps last year, a ton of them. And this is a football team that thought they were going to go on another January run. So the idea was, Taven Bryan, can you play whatever it is, 15 snaps? I don't know what the number is. But can you spell Calais Campbell so he can be fresh at the end of the year now that he's 32, 33 years old? And that just hasn't materialized in terms of the production. And the one last thing I will say in Taven Bryan's defense is that they've moved him outside a lot. They've asked him to play that outside. He's more of an interior guy. Not that he can't do it. He's more comfortable being the interior three technique guy. And I just said to you during the interview, it's like, I don't think there's anything worse. Well, I don't know about anything worse, but I think it goes wrong when you ask a rookie guy to come in and then play multiple positions or positions that they're not
right.
comfortable with.
Right.
I don't think that's a recipe to being successful, and I think it's kind of proven out that way.
I do too, by the way. I think he's in three technique. I don't think he's in it. I'll stand my ground on that. For more Jaguar talk, by the way, D-Rock's on with Demps tomorrow. Mike DeRocco on Jaguars Today tomorrow from 10 to noon. They'll break that down and a whole lot more. Other news in the NFL or other stuff in the NFL. You know, it was 50 years ago? 50 years ago today? The Heidi game.
Oh, yeah.
You guys know what the Heidi game was?
Yeah.
Do young bucks know the Heidi game?
Yeah, yep. I mean, I'm 42, and it was 50 years ago, but I am aware of.
So you're saying you weren't watching?
Yeah, I was not watching. But,
I was watching.
Were you actually watching?
Yeah,
seriously?
Yeah, my dad and I were watching. Now, I don't know that I would have remembered, but my dad reminded me. Oh well, my dad lived 5 more years after that, and he reminded me often. I had just turned 10. The Heidi game. For people that don't know the Heidi game, the Raiders were playing the Jets in this great game on NBC. And it was coming down to the wire, 7 o'clock or whatever, I'm guessing. And the Raiders scored 2 touchdowns in the last few minutes to win the game. But nobody saw it because NBC went to the movie. Heidi. They just pulled out of the game. And by the way, it's a legendary story because that's kind of the reason that nobody's done it since on any live sporting event. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. I mean, 60 minutes, it doesn't matter what's coming up next. They get out. And you know better than I do, but apparently 7 o'clock even back then on Sunday night – is a gigantic ratings time, right?
Yeah, well, of course, now is with 60 Minutes. It
right.
has been for
well, that's
decades,
why it's so big.
Then. And yeah. And you know, what's funny about that is things now are automated. You know, here at the right. radio station, at TV, they're so auto, you could, if you don't set the timer the right way, well, bam, that thing will just punch on. I mean, that's probably why you see some mistakes even on national television sometimes because of that. But That wasn't automated.
Well,
that was just somebody said, "Hey, it's 7 o'clock. It's time to roll."
Because nobody
that guy didn't like football.
But if it wasn't for that, nobody would know the damn Heidi movie.
No,
what's Heidi? Okay, I mean, I know Old Yeller. I don't know Heidi. Would you know the Heidi movie?
No,
nobody knows Heidi. There's a movie about someone named Heidi, but it's become like a big deal because this is 50 years ago today, which is kind of cool. What about this field in Mexico City? How can you let that happen?
Yeah,
I mean, in this age of 2018, incredible technology, isn't agronomy as technical and good as ever?
Not only that, but the NFL's so big now. You got to realize
it's the NFL.
The NFL logistically will send people way ahead, way in advance to some of these events. Like they do that in London. They do it for the Super Bowl. They'll do it for the Pro Bowl. They'll do it for – I'm assuming they did it for like the Canton game, the Hall of Fame game. Those kind of big events. The NFL has so much personnel that they will send – I don't know if they send an agronomist, but they'll send officials. And I don't know when – it stayed quiet, obviously, until Monday night when Monday Night Football
right,
showed
right,
it. But I don't know when the red flags went up on this for the NFL. But it kind of felt like the way the whole situation went down, that the red flags went up when Roger Goodell and everybody was watching Monday Night Football and saw the field and said, my goodness. Well, less than 24 hours later, they weren't playing in Mexico City anymore.
But I would just – I don't know. I'm shocked. And maybe, by the way, the people in Mexico City aren't nearly as geeked up about the NFL coming there as we think they should be.
Well, you could – a soccer match is probably more important. So yeah, they're more right. – they're not
– I can tell you this. Did you walk on the field at Wembley?
Oh, it's always super slick.
It was awful. It was in – Hayes, it was in worse shape. I walk on the field every year. Now, I'm no agronomist, but I can tell the difference between a field in good shape and a field in bad shape.
They played 3 weeks in a row.
And maybe that was it.
And
I'm sure there's some soccer in there somewhere, right? Or no, I don't know that. No soccer?
No soccer in there, but 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah, but I'm telling you.
And keep in mind, to give context to this, if there is a soccer match the next week after the Jags play, those folks at Wembley and in England want that field to be better for that soccer match than they do for that football game.
Well, that's my point about Mexico City. Maybe it's not as big a deal because I'm telling you, Wembley was not in good shape. I mean,
It wasn't like this. It wasn't even close to
this. No, of course not. They wouldn't have played it if it was like that. I'm not saying that. But I'm just saying of the 3 years I've gone, I can tell you this. Unless it's cold because I'm kind of a wuss, I doubt I'll do this in Buffalo. But even if it's marginally cold, I'm kind of a wuss. Okay, but when the weather's nice,
it ain't going to be 60 in Buffalo.
Right, I've already looked. It's the highest 31. But I used to go down on the field just to walk around and see the different fields. I would say Wembley was as bad a shape as any of the American fields I've seen. Did you think that you were down there, right?
Yeah, I would agree, and I think even the TV coverage showed the middle of the field was in rough shape. But I will say this, I didn't hear a lot of players complaining.
No, I didn't either.
A few years back when they first started to play there, they would complain about the slick field. You know? I mean, it's just fast, slick, and that's different, especially for the kickers and footing. Now, we did see some slips at Wembley Stadium. There were a couple of times.
Yeah.
But both teams are
and they adjust their cleats now. The Jaguars have known to do that.
But you're right, it's not the – it's certainly not a perfect surface to play on. That's for sure.
When you watch games on TV, you like mud games. You like them, or do you you guys want clean?
No, I like
artificial turf.
Like the Miami Duke game the other night that was played in an absolute monsoon. Like I enjoyed that. Like a guy, you know, returns a kick, gets kind of tackled, but doesn't get destroyed, so his momentum is still going, and he slides like six more yards.
I love it.
Like I like that.
You're a new age guy, Martino. You want perfect conditions. 78 passes per team. Everything a spiral. You're that guy, aren't you?
No, I would like the snow.
Yeah, love snow games.
And by the way, I hope it snows 6 feet while you're in Buffalo.
You're not going to Buffalo?
No, Hick is going. I hope it's a blizzard.
That's tremendous. Of course you do.
What kind of weather is it supposed to be on Sunday?
In Buffalo?
Yeah.
30.
I
haven't even – all I know is – look, dude, I'm on Long John alert, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, I hate cold weather. Do you hate cold weather? You don't because you wear, like, tank tops.
I don't like it. I'm just always woefully unprepared for it to befall me.
Well, you know the wind's going to blow in Buffalo, too, whether there's precipitation or not. I'll say the worst game I've covered here in Jacksonville, not here, but as covering the Jags, was Buffalo a few years back, and it was, like, late November, early December.
Right.
And the temperature actually wasn't – disgustingly bad, so they didn't get snow. Instead, you got rain. It was like 38 degrees and rain.
Is that the most miserable?
And it rained the whole game, like downpour. It was the most miserable experience I've had covering a game ever.
You know, it's funny. I'll bet you – now, part of it's
– and I was on the sideline then because I was doing sideline stuff.
Right.
And so you couldn't get away from it.
You know, it's funny. I'll bet you – and part of it's because of how prepared you are or aren't. I've been to – obviously, January games in Buffalo, New England, Pittsburgh, plenty of them. I've been to December games. I called a Penn State Michigan State game in December, which was really cold, really cold. I've called Ohio State games in late November. I've called Ohio State Michigan, which is obviously Thanksgiving weekend. I've done all those. The coldest ever was the game here. It was a Gator Bowl game in Jacksonville. Now, I wasn't dressed properly because it was freaking Jacksonville, but the 1983 Gator Bowl – Florida and Iowa. Your dad ever tell you about that game?
Yeah.
I've heard all about it.
Coldest game ever. I mean, it was probably like 19 degrees, but it felt like negative 50.
Yeah.
It's because I guess we just didn't know. It was unbelievably cold. So we have talked about that again.
I've covered Bishop Kenny soccer games when I covered preps.
Yeah.
Playoffs are right around that time.
Yeah.
I mean,
on the river.
It's some of the coldest I've ever been.
Yeah.
Because if you're not ready for it.
Right.
I mean, it is, and I think you do feel like I'm at home. This is Florida. Why is it this? Yeah. But I have covered a couple soccer games there where I was just beyond.
Because cold on that river is cold.
It's
cold on that river is cold now. But I mean, I'm telling you, we were just the Florida Iowa Gator Bowl game in '83, and it was funny how cold we were. I mean, you couldn't move. And I thought to myself, I've been to Buffalo and New England and Pittsburgh and State College and Columbus in November, December. It wasn't that cold. Now, again, you're prepared for it, and you're older. I was even more of a wuss when I was younger. I was an all-time cold weather wuss when I was young, so even more of one now.
We don't have to go back too far. I mean, January, the Buffalo game.
Yeah.
The Buffalo game wasn't that cold.
Here?
The week here.
Yeah.
In January? We did shows live. TV.
We did that show Friday night at the amphitheater.
That's right, y'all did.
And
it was really cold.
Really cold.
I kinda
wasn't the coldest like ever. Well, it was smart.
I kind of ducked out of that one. I know y'all enjoyed yourself.
But it was freezing
I hated missing out on you guys.
That was a cold week.
And then we went right to Pittsburgh after. Right. And that's top three coldest I've ever been. Yeah. That Sunday in Pittsburgh.
I thought the coldest game was at Nashville.
And that's why I didn't go to that one.
Oh, that was cold.
That was cold. Windy, right? It was windy there too.
Folks, that's our program. Thanks for being part of it. We'll see you tomorrow. Same bad time, same bad channel, but don't go anywhere. The Best Bet Poker Show, Allie McNeil and the Palace comes up right now. We're out of here. For Brent Martineau, Hayes Carline, Tara Lagerman, and Gibby, I'm Frank Frangie. So long.